Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. It's Friday. It's Friday. That's a win.
I know, right? We don't always talk on Friday. Friday means that we realize we didn't do a secret podcast all week, and oh, geez, we should probably do that. I mean, probably. We don't have to. We didn't. I don't think we said it would always be every week.
We do it most weeks.
We do. That's true. I like feeling like we don't have to, but we choose to.
We prefer to. We come here because we choose to.
Yeah, exactly. I always love it when we release one of these into the wild and somebody makes a comment about like something we said in it, because I do sometimes feel like it's just for us.
And yeah, it's weird because sometimes those filter back to me and sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes you'll loop me in on a thread and it'll be responding to this thing. And I was like, because I mean, I don't know who they... Like, sometimes they tweet at us, sometimes they tweet at Six Colors. There's also a Six Colors subscriber account. So, like, there's a lot of options. There's a lot of places for them to vent their frustration slash, comments.
There's not a lot of frustrations, usually.
People are pretty nice, generally. Nice.
People seem to like this thing, and it's different, and it's, you know, it's different on purpose, that it's just us talking and not it's not one of those, hey, and welcome back, subscribers, to the Six Colors podcast, brought to you this week by Mac Weldon, makers of underpants. It's not...
Yeah. I was going to do an ad read midway through, but okay. That's right. We don't have to do that now. I wonder what it would be. My most recent episode of The Rebound, we did an awkward silence that was brought to you by friendship.
Oh, nice. That's nice. That's good. It happens. You know, friendship means you can have the awkward silences. It's okay.
Yeah. You can sometimes nice to sit there with your podcast co-host in silence.
You don't have to fill every second. We did the Six Colors magazine this week.
Big week.
huge month, really. I had that moment. I was going through one of the things I do is I've got a little thing. It's a little template in the Six Colors CMS that I manually press a button when I'm doing the magazine. It generates a little summary of the last month, and then I pick and choose from there, and it's the section at the end of the newsletter that like lists here are some stories that you might have missed.
You may have missed, yeah.
And I was looking at them being like, geez, you know, everything happened since the last magazine, because it's September, everything happened. All of the Apple things happened. So it's not like we didn't have a lot going on in September. This is the biggest month. And now it's over. It's the last day right now.
Well, 30 days. There's a lot happening. There might be more stuff to happen, but it does seem like Apple covered a lot of their bases this month.
I'm calling it. There's more stuff.
There's more stuff.
Yeah. I'm not reporting this. I don't want to. Jason Snell reports that, but there's totally going to be more stuff.
I think the October event.
My level of confidence when you see the rumors out there again about new MacBook Pros and maybe even like a new MacBook Air. I am increasingly confident that we will see some sort of Apple event in October.
Yeah, you think event or you think like briefings?
I think event.
Well, that's interesting.
I think we're going to replay 2014.
14? Yeah, I remember that, and I think I remember it being odd. You know, why have an event like two events like a month apart, basically? But the answer
was like they wanted everybody focused on the iPhone and the Apple Watch in 2014. That's what they wanted everybody talking about.
And there was a lot of stuff, and jamming it all into one show might have led that show to be either overpacked or just certain things that they wanted to focus on couldn't get enough time, or other things couldn't get enough time.
Either nothing gets the focus that you want, or a couple things get the focus you want, and the other things get no focus, in which case, why would you even bother? And so they push them a month. And the other thing is, you know, I've said this before, so forgive me for saying it again, but the iPhone, like when back in Macworld, you know, we would do those Cover It Live blogs that you and I would do. Mm-hmm. And Cover It Live, like because they had their own servers and all that, they had their own like metric of like how many views for the total event. And it was a different metric from like our page views and stuff like that. But it was really interesting because over time, and we would, you know, Apple events would crash, not just us, but Apple events would like crash their servers a lot. But over time, what became very clear was the iPhone announcement was by far the biggest thing that Apple did. By far. Like, not like, you know, there's A, B, and C, and there's like the iPhone is A, and then WWDC is B, and then there's some other spring event, and that's C, and they're all kind of close, but the app, no, like twice as big as the next closest event. It was always enormous. The traffic patterns were different because those were the events where we got huge amounts of traffic from China and the rest of Asia, because that's a market that's very interested in the iPhone and not so interested in iPads and Macs, quite honestly. Even if they're interested, they're not so interested. And so I totally get it. Like, I mean, and these days you see lots of foreign press at an iPhone event.
Yep.
And something like the Mac, like, they can get away with that being a small event, even if they don't do it at Town Hall one last time. If we get a little encore presentation at Town Hall, even if that doesn't happen, and they do it somewhere off campus, they're not gonna need the list. They might.
Well, it's a smaller pool, right? I mean, the PC market.
Who cares
market,
about the Mac, right?
I mean, the PC market in general has compressed. It was never near. I don't know if it was ever as big at even its peak as the kind of sales that smartphones are doing these days.
If the Mac is 10 or 15% of Apple's business, okay. I mean, there you go, right? It's so 15% of the people,
right? It's a 10 to 15% that they care about, but it's clearly
right.
I mean, it's like having a product that's aimed at, you know, consumers versus a product that's aimed at like a niche business or a market, right? Like, you know, it's still a consumer-facing product, but it's a product that faces far fewer consumers than smartphone or mobile devices do these days.
Yeah, and so they can get away with doing a small Mac event, and I think they will. And I think it's good that they'll do a Mac event, because I think they do need to have... I mean, can you imagine a Mac event where they actually get to talk about the Mac and why they care about the Mac, and they can kind of like allay all the fears and soothe the frustrations of Mac people who are upset Mac stuff hasn't been updated in a very long time. I think the best way to do that would be with a Mac event rather than, you know, doing a press release and dashing off a couple of sentences at the end of or in the middle of an event like last month. I think this is a better way to do it, assuming that they do it. So, you know, that's cool. That's great. So I'm bullish on that now. I think that's what we're going to get, which is great.
Yeah, I agree that I think, you know, I was just talking about this on another podcast earlier this week, but I agree that I think something's going to happen. It should be, we'll probably start hearing about it relatively soon, just because I can't imagine this event would be any later than mid-October. Like, you start to really get into the holiday season, and the computers, they're not quite as tied to the holiday season as something like a smartphone or an Apple Watch, but I think you still don't want to necessarily like push that event like any later than mid-October.
Okay, so I'm going to predict. I'm going to do a prediction.
Okay.
I think the most likely date for it, and this is not a Jason knows this, because I'm not being coy here and I know the date and I'm trying to make this up. I'm that's not what I'm doing here. I think the most likely date is the 18th.
Yeah, I mean that's within the range. I figured it would be in the teens, like somewhere between the 14th.
I think
and
25th.
The 20th.
I think the 25th is very possible too. I think the 18th, that's too late.
I honestly think it's number one. Earlier.
I think it's 18th is number one, 25th is number two, and then the 11th is like number three slot here. I think it's going to be on the late side, but we'll
because
see.
I don't know. The holiday season's always kind of weird, right? Because there is some shopping, like Macs do enter into the equation for some people.
They just have to get it out by Thanksgiving, though, right?
Sure. But people start thinking about that stuff now. I mean, like, it's crazy how early this has gotten. Like, I went into the grocery store yesterday and there were like holiday decorations on like a package of Milano cookies or something. And I was like, it's not even Halloween, you know? And so anyways, I think people think about those things much earlier. And so I think just having that even on the radar is probably something. So I'm going to tend towards the earlier side rather than the later side. But I agree with you that on or about that like 18th date is probably fairly good guess.
I think that's the number one guess. And they like Tuesdays generally, unless it falls a holiday. They do like the Tuesdays. So that's my guess. Do they know when the look? I'm gonna look something up. It's journalism happening.
Oh, it's happening live in front of you.
So their quarterly results call isn't until the 27th.
That does throw a little bit of a wrinkle.
I think they would have to go. Well, I mean, yeah.
The quarter closes well in advance of that, right? Like results call comes several weeks after the end of the quarter.
Yeah, I wonder when they have to be quiet and when they don't. But I think they could totally. They often will make announcements right before
or right around those. Yeah.
So again, that puts it in the 18th, 25th kind of area. So yeah, because it's on the Thursday, the 27th. Do they usually do their calls on a Thursday?
No, that's late. It's usually a Tuesday. I've seen it on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday,
Dan,
Thursday.
Maybe they got something planned for Tuesday, the 25th.
Okay, all right. And you're selling me now. You're coming back around, and you're presenting convincing argument.
If you're just tuning in, it's the Criminology Podcast. I have my cup of tea here. It's got leaves
I also
at the
have
bottom.
My cup of tea here.
It's
I
in the shape
no
of an apple.
What could that mean? Well, it's interesting because I don't think I'm really in the market for a new MacBook at this point, but I am at this sort of weird dilemma right now. I'll invite you and our listeners in on this dilemma. Later this fall, I will be traveling overseas.
Yes.
Probably for several weeks, which
is going to
present
some... that you're doing this.
I know. It's going to present some interesting challenges, though, not least of which is, as a freelancer, I still have to, do some work.
Yeah.
And a lot of my work involves recording podcasts.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the things I have to... And some of that work involves editing podcasts.
Yep.
Now, my current MacBook is a 11-inch MacBook Air, which I like, and it's a slightly souped-up one. It's got an i7 in it, so it's a fairly capable little machine. It's only, I think it's like a 2014, so it's not super old either. And I've edited podcasts on it before. I think the biggest question on it is not so much like the horsepower, which I think is capable of it, but having an 11-inch screen on which to do podcast editing can sometimes feel a little cramped.
I do it. I can do
yeah,
it.
I can do it. And the question for me is, I briefly had this thought, which was that we recently replaced my dad's MacBook, and he decided that, despite the fact that he doesn't really do much other than web browsing on his computer, he wanted a 13-inch MacBook Pro because it was the most similar to his old MacBook. And so we said, sure, whatever. This is not like, you can afford it. It's not like a big deal. Even though it's way more computer than you need, it's fine. And I thought, well, that's a nice computer. It's way more powerful than my computer. Hey, what if we switched computers for like 6 weeks? And I kind of been toying with this idea, but I think that the biggest argument against it is when you're traveling, like having an 11-inch MacBook Air is actually really nice because it's super small and fits in a lot of places, and it's very light. And so I kind of sit and going back and forth like, well, do I want to see about a machine with more horsepower, or should I just take the fact that I already have like the lightweight portability and that's sort of more of an operative, argument in this case. And so, I mean, the one thing that could potentially throw a wrench in that is if they decide to update, the MacBook line, whether it be Pros and or Airs, that could change the calculus a little bit. But then at that point, it's a question of, do you want to take a brand new machine that has no reliability track record and travel with it for 6 weeks with it as your only computer? That also sounds kind of terrifying.
You are on the horns of a dilemma there.
I am.
And you use GarageBand to edit podcasts, right? I mean, that's the thing is...
Yeah, I'm not using Logic.
I can fit Logic on the 11, but I think Logic has more... It's got more junk on the screen, but you can turn most of it off. And I think GarageBand just has lots of Chrome, and you just got to leave it on, and it's not as great.
Honestly, you got to like full screen it. It's really the only way to do GarageBand on that.
It's the only way to be sure.
Yeah. Nuke it from
I see your dilemma. You could totally trade with your dad, but then you are lugging around a 13. I've got a 13-inch MacBook Pro here that I'm actually. You reminded me. I'm deleting things off of it because I got to send it back to Apple. This was my Sierra.
Yes.
But it is so big compared to my 11-inch Air.
I mean, it's surprisingly small and light compared with something like a MacBook of yesteryear. He was replacing a 2008 MacBook, so that thing's like a tank.
Yeah.
And even that was, I remember when that was light compared to the ones that came before it. Was it a 13-inch MacBook is what, in the 3 to 4 pound range, somewhere in there?
I don't know.
Maybe a little over four.
Yeah.
It's not
so big. My mom had one that when iPad only, I brought back and I like refurbished and then sold on Craigslist to a college student. But, I was shocked at how huge it was. And, drive.
It's a frame of reference thing, right? Like, because it's for the years that we all used big clunky laptops, we got there and we're like, oh, this is so much lighter and so much smaller. Because that was Apple's thing for years upon years was, let's make these laptops smaller
and
lighter.
Once you've used the MacBook Air.
Or an iPad, right? Like, you start, your frame of reference has completely changed because you're like, oh, my iPad weighs like a pound, that's the thing. So, I guess that's the other thing. I will probably bring my iPad just to have access to... stuff to write about.
Sure.
And I know you've done a lot of iPad audio editing on the iPad Pro. So that's another consideration as well. Well, do I change up my workflow a little bit?
Yeah, the problem is you can't really record podcasts on the iPad.
Right, I can't go iPad only. That's the thing. That's not going to work. So I'm going to have to bring a Mac. And if I'm going to have to bring a Mac, maybe it makes sense. And if I'm going to bring like three different devices, then maybe it makes sense to bring the 11-inch Air because it's just more compact and smaller.
I think you can probably muddle through with just the Air.
Yeah, I think it will be okay.
Because it's all you're doing is sort of slapping together those podcasts, which is not a huge percentage, I think, of what you do.
No, there's like a couple I will basically probably be in the state of editing 1 to 2 podcasts a week at that point, I think. So that's not a lot.
No, you could probably manage that. You're gonna have a time difference. This is interesting, right? I mean, you've got a lot of challenges. There's some good fodder for writing in this.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. I thought about the time difference thing, and the thing with the time difference is that it actually works pretty well because I will be primarily in India. The time difference from where I am right now is India is 9.5 hours ahead. So normally,
love that half.
Yeah, the half is what kills you. Normally, just to give people a peek behind the scenes, we record. I mean, I guess they know this if you listen live to like Clockwise. We record at noon Eastern, yes. 9 a.m. Pacific.
Exactly.
So I'm now, compared to you, instead of being 3 hours ahead of you, I will be 12 and a half hours ahead of you. So it will be 9:30 at night for
PM.
Me, which is actually not that bad. The bigger problems are things like when we often record The Incomparable, that's often like at 11 o'clock at night.
7:30 p.m. Pacific. So that's 8 a.m.
That's 8. Yeah.
That's 8 a.m. Just get up a little early.
I get up a little early, I guess. I mean,
doing Incomparable in the morning.
None of these things are impossible, I guess, but like it's going to be weird. I also should find out if I have an internet connection that's good enough for podcasting. That's going to be an interesting question as well.
Yeah, my understanding was that the place where you're going had a pretty good internet connection, but
it's definitely in existence. It's definitely like at least cable. It is some sort of cable modem,
yeah,
I believe.
All right.
So hopefully it should be fine. But you never know when you're also going like internationally how that's going to affect things. You know,
that's true.
Just traffic.
You never do, and podcasting is finicky because you want you need to be able to hear
low latency
them, and there's all of that going on. But
it will be an interesting experiment, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that'll be good. You'll be my. I'll just wake up and there'll be things posted on Six Colors. Is what it's going to be. It's just like, oh, Dad is
somewhere.
Dan posted something in the middle of the night. But that's cool. I think it'll work. I think the challenge. I've been meaning to write something about this because I've talked about it a little bit, but I haven't written anything about it, is the you can work anywhere thing. I may talk about, we may do an episode about this on Free Agents, but you can work anywhere is absolutely true.
Yep.
But it means that you are working in
anywhere.
In anywhere. And working in anywhere is not the best thing in the world. Like I found it... I mean, I do it. I was meeting somebody for coffee, and they ran like an hour late the other day, and I was at this coffee shop, and I worked, and it was fine. It was fine. I wrote an article and turned it in, and it was fine. I could do it. I could work from anywhere. But working from a Pete's Coffee in San Bruno, California, is not quite as difficult as working from, like, in January, I'm going to Hawaii, as like working from Hawaii, or when I go to Ireland in November to the UL conference, that's going to be hard, right? Because I'm going to still have to write some things from there. I mean, I could take it all off, but I'm giving away like money if I do that, and that's not great. As a freelancer and independent person, you don't want to forego that if you can, but that means you're now, you can work from anywhere, but you have to, and that's hard, and that'll be hard for you too, right? Because you'll be in India, and it's like, I know that there's going to be some time, I don't know how veiled we want to make this, but you know, you're going to be, the person you're staying with has a job.
Yep.
So you're going to have time on your own, and you could wander around the streets, and maybe you will a little bit, but you may also end up sitting in an apartment in India and
or a coffee shop or something. Who knows?
I mean, blogging about Apple things, and that's just, it's doable, but it does take a level of, everything in your brain is telling you, I'm on vacation. I'm not in my usual place. I don't need to work, and you have to force yourself to do that. Even when I visit my mom in Arizona, I have that where she's
You
know, she's living her life, and she's like, "Oh, what do you want to do?" And I'm like, "I got to sit down and write for a couple of hours. Sorry, right. I have to do my job."
Even before I was a freelancer, when I would go away, you know, on vacation or the holidays or whatever, I was always working on like a book project. And so I remember many times that like I would be up in upstate New York at my, you know, family's for Christmas or whatever. And I would, you know, be the day or two before Christmas. I'm like, oh, I drive down to like a Starbucks nearby and I would sit there and write for like an hour or two, which was like sort of workish. And I was still like removing myself from like a social environment in order to do that. And sometimes it's about making choices too, right? Like, you know, I went to Hawaii earlier this year, and that part of that was, you know, it was very much a vacation. And so in that one, I did take the time off. And sometimes, you know, that introduces additional complexities, as you said, because a lot of times you're giving up money. And I know you and David talked about this a little bit on Free Agents. But like sometimes that's a trade-off you make too, right? With the, totally. Well, I'm losing money, but like I'm spending time with someone and that's something I want to do as well. And I need to be able to balance those things.
Yeah. So Lauren is she is a librarian. My wife, Lauren, is a librarian. Just for the people out there, you know who Lauren is, but Lauren Snell, not Friedman.
Not Friedman. No.
She's hoping to get a full-time job, but she's a part-timer. She's working almost full-time hours, but she's working for a couple different libraries at an hourly rate. And what that means is it means that if she gets hired, she gets a ridiculously small amount of vacation time, and it will be a problem for us in terms of like how we spend our family vacation time going forward if she gets hired for a job that she wants to apply for. But right now, it's not a problem because she's just hourly and she can just say, I'm going to be gone this week, and they fill her hours with somebody else and it's fine. It's not a problem. The people who supervise her, it's not a problem. But what it means is she decided to come with me to Ireland. It means that the cost, even though there's the cost of flying her there, and because I'm participating in the UL conference, I've got stuff covered by them. So it's a great deal for her to come. But it's not just the cost of flying her there. It is the cost of her not working for that week. And that is one of the things you have to factor in. And it's something you got to factor in. And so it's the same thing. It's like you can take, like when I go to Hawaii, will probably be the first time in a while that I try to have like nothing. Like if we do upgrade, it will be in advance. Or I will just say, have do my first one where like I make Mike do it, right? Clockwise, I drop out every now and then. I'll be out that week. You do that. We have two hosts. It's fine. Yep. But some stuff I will probably not do, or I will pre-record for that. So it'll be minimal. But still, you know, short of me saying like, hey, Stephen Hackett, can you work with Dan on Six Colors that week? Which maybe I'll ask him. I don't know. Short of that, I'm still going to have to do some stuff. And if I don't want to write my Macworld column that week, I can do that. But that's money I don't get. So I have to make those decisions. And it makes it a little bit harder. But Oh, by the way, I mentioned UL. I should mention this. It's in the newsletter and you can get to the link there. But I'm going to mention it here too. If you are a podcast type person and not a newsletter type person, because I know we have both kinds in the Six Colors subscriber list, you can get, if you want to go, especially if you're somebody in Europe, where it's a lot closer. I know it's hard for people in North America, especially in the West Coast, but the East Coast is a little bit easier to get to Ireland. November 1st and 2nd, it's in Killarney, which is kind of often in the far off parts of Ireland, but you actually fly into Dublin and there's an UL train that you take that they charter. It takes you directly to Killarney. It's pretty awesome. November 1st and 2nd, and you can get 20% off because you're a Six Colors subscriber. There's a link in the magazine you can go to, or if you just go to ull.ie, ull.ie, and follow the links to sign up. If you put in the discount code Six Colors, one word, SIXCOLORS, no you, you can get 20% off. So if you are thinking about it, if I have tempted you, you can get a deal to go to UL, and I would love to see you there. And my hope is I'm going to bring some Six Color stickers, so I will give you a sticker.
I would like to go. I would like to go at some point, but I don't think it's in the cards this year.
Yeah, got other travel.
Perhaps I will go, and you know what they say, UL's well that ends well.
Yeah,
had to happen.
Sorry. Yeah, exactly. It's funny. this happened kind of late in the game. I was originally not going to go, and then they asked me to come and be a like one of the four special guests or something toward the end of it. And I'm going to do a podcast from there. So there's also a link in the magazine to the podcast feed. So even if you're not going, you can listen. I'm going to do some interviews, and that's like why I'm going, basically, is to produce that audio content for the conference, which is kind of fun and different. And I pitched them on it, and they liked it. So that's what we're going to do. But this is surprising. So this is 2016. I'm going back to Ireland. I realized I've been to Ireland 4 years in a row now. I'd never been before. And now I've been. IDG had a meeting in Dublin in 2013. And then I went to Ulle in the spring of 14 and 15. And now in the fall of 16, I'm going back to Ulle because they moved it from spring to fall. And that's just weird. I'm not like the most amazing international traveler. I do it, but I didn't do it until I was 30, but I've done a lot in the last 15 years. But that's just weird. I love Ireland. It's great.
Nice. I love Ireland too. I've been there in several, well, I stopped in the airport briefly on my way to Portugal last year, but other than that, I haven't been in probably about 10 years. So yeah, it's on my list to go back.
Yeah. We might do a meetup or something on the Friday after Ulle in Dublin somewhere. I keep watching the skies for that because I know Mike Hurley's going to be around. And so on the Friday night after we get back, so we might do a meetup somewhere. Cause really there's no better place to do a meetup than Dublin because, you just have some, Guinness and
it's easy to find some beer. That's true.
It is. Well, and those are my people. My dark trips beer. To Ireland have taught me nothing. They have taught me that it is a nation with black tea and dark beer. Yes, please.
Yeah,
yes,
that's all.
These are our people, Dan.
This is true. This is
you
this
and
is
me a, both.
I've spent a lot of time there and in Scotland, and those are both my people.
Yeah, I know. Seriously, and yeah, and that's true too. That if I look at my family tree, that's where they all are.
I mostly come from Eastern Europe, actually.
Yeah,
so
I know, but I got that one. I got that one going too. That I yes, you are what Mordakovic.
Yeah, that's my actual. This is that. Yeah, see, the secret podcast listeners get super secrets. Super secrets about how
you're
my
going
name
to
is not really my name.
It's all been a lie.
It's all been a lie. I've lied to you all along. Da tovrish.
Oh, no. All the Russian I learned from X-Men comics.
I learned it from 4 years of taking Russian in high school. If you really want to get deep into the secrets,
I know. But. Well, I we know that because you took all that Russian, and yet when you do a Russian submarine captain, you're just doing your
Sean Connery.
That's
true. It's true. Sean Connery was Russian. Little known fact. Not made.
Yanish Nayu.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's good.
That's my girlfriend in college was a Russian major, or mine. She went to Russia for her overseas study. So I learned almost no Russian from that. But
As my friend and fellow classmate Jason Tassi used to say, "Я не понимаю, когда ты говоришь по-русски," which means I don't understand when you speak in Russian.
Yeah,
that's a handy one.
Yeah, я не говорю по-русски.
That just says you're not talking. You don't speak Russian. That's true.
Da. See,
хорошо.
These are the things that I know. Well, I took German in college, and boy, we're off track. It's a secret podcast. I took German in college, and there was a copy editor at my college newspaper who didn't know any German, but she had been to Germany, and she said, "The only thing I know is ich habe Hunger," and she said, "I think that means I would like some food." And I said, "Well, it means I'm hungry, but I guess they would get the point of that." But it's like, you know, come on, basic stuff. Know how to say where's the bathroom. In wherever you are. That is like number one. Where's the bathroom?
That's a good one. Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's super,
or
super key.
I don't speak your language.
Or I don't speak, yeah. Or you do you speak English? Those are also good.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Also in the magazine, Subscriber Joe. It's
Subscriber
Joe Steele.
No, that's probably not true.
It's Joe
not a real
Steele.
Name.
Asked me to write about Apple in the living room. That's actually the article that I wrote at the Pete's Coffee in San Bruno, California.
All right.
Which I linked to your Macworld piece about it. The rumors still fly. I mean, I can see it now. Like, I could see a possibility where the FCC just says, "Hey, you know what? TV is just stuff on a stream. and any box can do it, and cable companies should just support boxes.
And the trick with that is they just turfed that vote. Like, that vote just got delayed.
It got delayed.
Which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Because I think the reason a lot of people acknowledge the reason it got delayed was because it probably, there was some question about whether or not it would pass.
Right.
And then you get politics get in there too, because the FCC is a commission with five commissioners who are both Democratic and Republican. And so oftentimes things go along party lines. Sometimes they do not. The weird thing about this whole thing is kind of a mess, because it involves the FCC saying you should basically let any platform should be able to access your content via an app that you create.
Right.
Some of the big providers fought against this because they're like, look, we're already making apps. You know what I say to that? A lot of your apps suck.
Yeah. Well,
and your apps aren't on every platform. You talked about that Xfinity app, right?
Right.
But you can't get that on your Apple TV. You can get it on your iPad.
Exactly. Right. So the Xfinity now has an app called TV, and it literally, I can watch anything that's on live. When I'm in my house, I can watch anything that's on live just streamed.
Right.
Like, it turns my iPad into a cable box, essentially. Even like stuff that's restricted from streaming, like Netflix, or not Netflix, like Major League Baseball or HBO or something. It's it's fine. It's fine because it's in my house. It's essentially covered under their licenses for in-home viewing of this stuff. So it's like I had that moment of like, you know, oh my God, this software has turned my iPad into a cable box. And that's sort of what they're saying. But where I have a problem with it is, I hesitate to say that the government should say to every cable company, you shall write apps for these platforms. And it's like, they're the regulators, they get to demand this, but I'd almost rather it be, you shall have an open API.
Right, but the problem is just like, you know, even the FCC, which is a fairly technical, you know, body, it's always a question to me how technically versed those people are. And I think they're very smart and they try to learn things, but sometimes it's tough. I think the issues come into, so for example, I'm in a similar boat with you. I'm in an interesting situation. So I a while back signed up, probably about a year ago now, for Comcast also has this streaming television service. So I don't have a cable box. But I do get some cable channels as part of like a monthly, I pay like $15 a month and I get a bunch of cable channels, and I can use, I think, that same app that you use essentially to stream TV. And so it's not even like it's a cable box. I mean, it's just an on-demand streaming, like live streaming thing sort of, right? Like I don't have a cable box anywhere in my house. And that's great. But I run into that problem with you is like, well, I can only watch on my iPad. I want to watch stuff on my TV. And I can record stuff even because I have this like cloud DVR that they give you, but I can only play that back on a computer or an iPad, which is also frustrating. So I ended up in this situation this fall, thinking about this deal. So the CW struck a deal where they basically pulled their shows from Hulu so that they can put the entire seasons on Netflix after the seasons are over. And for a while there, I was on sort of like, okay, so I do my weekly Arrowcast over at The Incomparable. It's like, I'm going to need to watch these shows somehow, and I can record them, but then I have to commit to watching them, all of them, on my iPad. I'd much rather watch them on my nice big television. And so there was a question for a while about how I was going to accomplish that, and the answer is that the CW came out with an app for Apple TV, which is great. But it would certainly be convenient for me if Comcast was to say, let's make an app for the Apple TV that lets you access that cloud DVR and stream your channels live.
Yeah, right.
I can see exactly why they think they don't want to do that. And so my worry is, without somebody mandating they have to do that, they just won't.
Probably. Although you could potentially see them. I mean, I could have made that argument for the iPad too. And they did eventually.
Yeah, I think they see that differently, though. They have this weird, and a lot of these streaming services are kind of, for a long time, we're kind of allergic to the idea of watching that content on your big television. Like for a long time, Hulu, you could only watch it in like, and for a long time, certain shows you could only watch on the computer.
So,
and I think it's this weird feeling like they're worried like, oh, people won't watch like regular TV anymore. And the answer is, guys, this is regular TV now.
Yeah,
like, this is how we do it.
When I look at one of the things that I try to do sometimes with new tech stuff is imagine where it'll be in 5 years and then try to figure out how it'll get there instead of imagining how it is now. Yeah. And with this, it's sort of like when I use that TV app on the iPad, I'm like, oh, this is TV, right? And so like Comcast, for example, just since you and I both use them, just because like if I launch a Comcast app on the Apple TV and it comes up with a Comcast guide and it lets me access a cloud DVR and it lets me watch shows that are live and all of that, at some point it doesn't matter, right?
Right, exactly.
At some point, does it matter that that's not a Comcast box that I'm renting from Comcast? It's an X1 or whatever they've got. Does it really matter to them? And I think this is one of the things that the cable companies will just get over, is that traditional, once your cable box is a streamer itself, then it doesn't matter whether they use your streamer or your app on someone else's streamer. Because I think what they're concerned about is they want to push their pay-per-view and they want to control the experience, and they don't want to have it be that you have to download a bundle of 15 different channel apps to get their TV service. What they want is you'll get their TV service as an app. And I think that's fine. And I think that unlocks... Yeah. It does mean that box could have other stuff on it that isn't their services, and they have to compete. And I think that's what scares them.
But I think that's good.
In the end, though, I think that's where it will end up. If you look out 5 years, is they're going to have two. Comcast, for example, is going to have two different services. They're going to have internet that is a wire that comes to your house that you're going to have to pay for. But they hate being dumb pipes and all that. But they're going to have that, and then they're going to have programming. And you can subscribe to their internet and not their programming, or you can subscribe to their internet and their programming, but their programming is just an app that you subscribe to, just like you can subscribe to Netflix. Yep. And I feel like that is where it's going, and so maybe we should just hurry up and get there, but it's too simple.
They're turning the battleship is the thing. It's a giant company, and like so many of these giant media companies, they have a huge vested interest in keeping things the way they are and the way that they know they can make money.
As long as possible.
And it won't be until like the acid eats away the entire hull of that battleship that they'll be realizing, oh, we should have turned away from this acid pocket for years ago.
When I look at that TV app, I realize now that ship is turning.
I can see it now.
Like they have an app that runs on an Apple platform that provides all of their content. The entirety of cable TV is in that app. Like I don't need to have a TV anymore in my house. I could turn it off, still pay for television through Comcast, and get everything now because they've got that app. So it's only a couple of steps away. Now, will they get there? And they may be one of the ones that's actually more forward thinking in that way than some of these others. So I don't know. But my point in the magazine was to say, what's Apple's strategy in the living room? I feel like Apple's strategy is wait and be positioned to spring when there's an opportunity. But at this point, if you're a tech company watching the television industry, there's not much penalty in waiting because the world continues to change. It's going to change in your favor, almost certainly. You don't want to have no technology, but at the same time, I don't look at what Roku or Google or Amazon is doing and say, oh, they're running away with it. Apple squandered their chance. No. They're all just kind of... They're like vultures circling.
Yeah, everybody's hovering, right? And it's funny too because you look at the Apple TV and the Amazon Fire TV and the Roku and all this stuff, and you think, I don't know, like I helped my parents upgrade to a digital cable earlier this year when they finally got a new big TV, and the thing that occurred to me was, the set-top boxes are terrible, first of all. Like, they're just really bad. Like, those people are not, like, they haven't had a lot of incentive to improve their interfaces, and they generally just kind of suck. And so having that market opened up to people who spend a lot of time on user interface design is a huge improvement for consumers. And apps, which let you, like, it's way easier to update the UI in an app than it is to update the UI in a cable box. So, that seems a no-brainer in terms of things going that way, because why would you distribute these old infrastructures when everybody is, like, already bringing other infrastructure into their house. I think you're totally right about the TV thing and about the tech companies waiting. I think Apple tried really hard and a number of times to try and figure out if they could make an end run around this problem. And the answer is, I think all those companies are just not seeing it or just want to protect their interests. I think, there's a possibility still that Apple will at some point find a way into that market. But it may be that they have to wait for the TV companies to figure out that this is not, the way things are now are not the way things will be forever. So I'm interested to see, because I think Apple has maneuvered a lot, and they hired some guy from Comcast, I think, recently, who was a digital strategy guy. They're like you said, they're building a foundation. They're getting ready. at some point this is going to change in the same way that the way that we listen to music has changed a couple times now in the last 15 to 20 years. So it's an interesting field to watch, and I think it's going to keep changing. It's great now. I mean, I feel like it's already a huge improvement. I remember when Hulu started, and it felt like this is what I wanted my entire life, is something like Hulu or Netflix, where I used to get so, as a kid, getting so frustrating trying to find things. When are they on? What episode am I going to see when I turn this on? Like, the whole random element of it. It's like, that was a huge, I remember as a kid, that was like a big thing for me. Just like, I want to watch these TV shows, but like, I'm totally at the whims of whatever is pushed over the air at this particular time.
So time. Being,
yeah, this is already a huge improvement, but it's always hard to see that when you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think our subscriber Joe and his frustrations with the Apple TV are perfectly justified, but I also see, like, from a business standpoint, why Apple is not investing maybe as much as they could, because I Apple TV is a product, and I use it, and it's fine. It's got issues. Joe knows all the issues, but it's not just a product, right? It's also like a marker that Apple has put down of, like, we're going to be in this game.
Yeah, yeah. It's a flag. They planted their flag there.
And yet I feel like until, like, this is a good example where if it they've got that marker. So if the FCC says, yes, you need to write apps for these boxes, then one of those boxes will belong to Apple. And it's like, yay. And Comcast will say, we already did the work because we did this iOS app.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And that'll be good. And then suddenly Apple can say, you don't even need a cable box anymore. You just get Apple TV and subscribe to Comcast or whatever service, or CBS All Access, or, you know, whatever. And you'll get your TV. And job done, right? You don't need a cable box. We're finally input one. Because they all these boxes want to be input one. And as long as you've also got traditional TV, they can't be. So if you're a cord cutter, none of this matters. You've already done it. But the problem is that there aren't that many cord cutters, honestly. We there are more of them all the time, but there's still a lot of people using traditional TV. And the cord cutting, you know, the bundles and all of that are changing. We've talked about that before.
I haven't even gotten into, like, you know, people, I'd grown up, all I had was broadcast TV. So, you know.
Me too. And I didn't even have, I had only broadcast, and we only got like five channels or something like that. So
yeah, I think we had six or seven, but like two of them were PBS because I live in Boston.
Boston, yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, I got, that's why I don't know, like, episodes of The Brady Bunch, because that was on a channel I didn't get. That was on.
Yeah.
I
feel like we could do a whole show just on the TV environment. It's so interesting.
Yeah. And keeps changing.
It does.
Note to subscriber Joe.
Yeah.
Get on that.
Yeah, TV show Joe.
The sigh podcast about digital TV. Just we sigh for half an hour.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back again next week, probably. We're not promising everything, but we like it, so we probably will be. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say I'm available. Sure. Let me check my calendar.
You're available next week?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm around.
Okay, good. Great. Well, we'll do that then. Okay, but thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. We really appreciate you helping keep the lights on and supporting us in what we do, wherever we do it from, around the world.
Around the world.
Until next time. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.